Coming up on Weekend America.
The financial crisis is a personal crisis, and it's hitting everyone.
Do you know what foreclosure means?
Not living in a house.
Do you have friends at school who have foreclosures?
Some friends.
In Vegas, the losses mount. I'm John Moe. In Michigan, housing issues kept two sisters apart for years, and now they're back together.
I believe sometimes dreams do come true. Things do happen. If you wait long enough and you pray hard, it happens.
And for an undersized, overmatched football team in California, praying wasn't enough, so they got creative.
It doesn't matter to us whether they think that a trick play is coming, because yes, it is. On every play, something different is going to be coming at you.
A little ingenuity may be changing the face of football. It's Weekend America after the news.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
From American Public Media, it's Weekend America. I'm John Moe. Welcome to the end of 2008. Pretty dramatic year, you gotta say. Great year if you were Barack Obama and the Democrats. Bad year if you were John McCain. Or a bad year if you had any kind of money at all. Great year if you were the Philadelphia Phillies. Bad year for the New York Yankees. That's really the year, kind of, isn't it? A year where everything was a little upside down. We'll look back at some of our favorite stories from the past year, give you an update on them, try to turn them right side up again. What do you remember about 2008?
First and foremost, Barack Obama.
We made history. We elected the first African-American president.
Obama, Obama, and Obama.
My daughter got married, and my son got married.
My stock portfolio was reduced by about 50%.
Getting laid off a couple months ago.
Everyone hating on the Vampire Weekend album for the entire year.
Oh, I remember the gas prices spiking really high.
I remember the Cubs disappointing me yet again.
Coaching a high school cross country team for the first time and getting engaged.
Oh, busy year. Those voices came to us from San Francisco, Chicago, and Fairbanks, Alaska. Foreclosures have sadly been one of the most dominant stories in America this year. Nowhere has been hit harder than Las Vegas. It's had the highest rate of foreclosures in the nation for the last 20 months. When Vegas had a housing boom, it boomed big. Home construction was way up, lots of housing speculation, a huge influx of new residents. But when it fell hard. It's especially dire in the newer parts of Las Vegas. Recently built subdivisions like the gated community of San Nicolo. Weekend America's Chrissy Clark has been following residents there over the last year.
I first went to the gated community of San Nicolo last spring. But before I could talk to anyone, of course, I had to get behind the gate. The gate only opens if you know the secret code. If you're not a homeowner, you have to dial up your host at a call box.
Hello?
Hi, is this Karen?
Yes.
Hi, it's Chrissy. The gate is what gives the new Spanish-style homes inside a sense of security, exclusivity. And a few years ago, price tags of $500,000 and up. And the gates are swinging open.
Access granted.
At least, that's how the gate used to work, until a weekend last summer.
I came home one night. The gate was broken.
Karen Lewis moved into a house behind this gate 2 years ago with her husband and four-year-old son. Their dream house, she calls it. High ceilings, a view of the mountains, a private golf course nearby. But that night, the night of the broken gate, was a kind of turning point. Some kids had rammed through the gate to get to a raging party next door to her house. They were racing up and down the block in their cars. And she realized the gated community she'd moved into was changing. Fast.
It just wasn't what I expected. The gate being continuously broken, the party.
The break-ins, which just occurred, the busted windows.
That's one of Karen's neighbors. I'll call her Veronica. She didn't want to use her real name in case her comments got back to any of her neighbors.
The roommates, the broken-down cars.
What's been happening to San Nicolo is by now a familiar story. It all started a few years ago, back when families were first buying new homes here. So were small investors. The places were selling like hotcakes, or another substance, as Butch Cody, who lives a few doors down, puts it.
Wow, it's like, who needs to be a drug dealer when you can buy real estate in Las Vegas? Not that I sell drugs.
At the time, Butch bought three houses in the neighborhood with adjustable-rate mortgages. He lives in one of them. He planned to sell the others for a quick profit, but that didn't happen. Now that the monthly rates have ballooned, Butch can't afford the properties anymore. He stopped paying the mortgage on his home in January. He guesses the bank will get around to seizing it in another few months.
It's an empty house. I found one.
24 of the 214 homes in San Nicolo are in some state of foreclosure when I visit the first time. Karen and her son Cooper walk around the neighborhood trying to guess which ones they are.
It's probably a foreclosure, but I'm not sure. If you see the lawn's dead.
It's not just foreclosures that are affecting San Nicolo. With the sagging market, investors who've avoided foreclosures still can't sell their houses like they'd planned. So they've been renting them out instead. Houses designed for single families are being rented to college kids or multiple families at a time.
So on the corner, we believe that it's a halfway house. There are about six cars. It seems like a bit of an AA meeting. I fully support AA, and I think it's a wonderful thing. But they don't say hi.
Later, I go to the house that Karen thinks is a halfway house. Hi, I'm Chrissy. I'm a reporter.
Oh, sorry.
A woman named Georgina and her 12-year-old granddaughter, Topaz, crack the door open.
Everybody's asleep.
Oh, sorry about that.
Everybody work in the nighttime.
Oh, where do they work? Where do they work?
They are taxi drivers.
Okay. They're graveyard.
Yeah, everybody's sleeping.
They started renting this house a year before, and they love it.
Yeah, because we have more rooms here and we are more together.
And how
we are going to buy the house.
Probably. You're going to buy the house?
We're going to buy the house. Yeah, we really like the neighbor.
How many people live here?
Nine.
No.
Yes.
Cállate.
But I've
said seven.
Okay. Seven. Oh, Karen, you've got the letter?
The next time I visit San Nicolo, it's late August, and news about the real estate market has only gotten worse.
Let's open up the letter. Yeah, en español.
And some of it just arrived in one resident's mailbox. Veronica, the one who didn't want to use her real name last time, she rents a house in San Nicolo, and she accidentally opened a letter addressed to her landlord. It was in Spanish.
You get to hear my bad Spanish. Un proceso para. It's urgent. You call us.
Contact us right away.
Oh, geez, foreclosure.
Veronica has come over to her neighbor Karen Lewis's house for a little moral support while she reels at the implications of this letter.
Do you want some water with ice?
She can't quite figure out why her landlord hadn't told her that the house she's been promptly paying rent on for the last 2 years is in foreclosure.
It was one of these bad dreams where you kept flipping over the envelope and looking to see, is there a mistake? Please don't let this be happening to me. I can't believe it's happening to me.
Veronica is a single mom, and she just got laid off from her job as an IT manager in the retail industry. Now, besides finding a new job, she'll have to find somewhere else to live, fast. But shocked as both she and Karen are by this letter, they've almost gotten used to this kind of bad news.
It becomes comical. I mean, this is completely laughable to us right now. That's all we can do. We used to get upset about this, and we were a bit appalled. Now it's like, oh, whatever, guys.
When people leave, do they ever say goodbye, or do you ever say goodbye to them?
No. They're just gone.
Yeah.
I go for a walk with Karen and her son, Cooper, so I can see what else has happened to San Nicolo since I was here last. Some things have gotten better. Some have gotten worse. The family of taxi drivers that Karen thought was a halfway house, one day they just moved out, and now the house is empty. The guy who compared buying Las Vegas real estate to drug dealing, he's gone too. His lawn is dead, and there's garbage all over it. But someone has just bought the house and is about to re-landscape the place. Still, there's a new batch of houses with dead lawns and signs in front that say bank-owned. And walking around the neighborhood, Cooper is starting to learn words that are not in your typical pre-K vocabulary. Do you know what foreclosure means?
Not living in a house.
Do you have friends at school who have foreclosures?
Some friends.
Down the street, a man is putting a pair of slippers onto a pile of odds and ends on the curb. Books, some old pots, magazines.
Just stuff. Yeah, it's all the giveaway stuff. Various things we've accumulated through the years.
His name is Mike Hager, and his house is about to be foreclosed. He had to stop making payments about a year ago when his real estate business went under. We go inside, and a little boy, Mike's grandson, looks at me. The tape's a little quiet there, but the boy yells, "They're here to take away our house." Mike explains that they've been showing the house to potential buyers all week, and his grandson must think I'm one of them. Mike is trying to short sell the place before the foreclosure proceedings are complete to avoid completely ruining his credit. But he's not sure it'll work. So in the meantime, he and his family are moving into a rental unit across town while their credit is still good enough to get a landlord to lease to them.
Smaller house, but hey, you can either look at the bad things or you can look at the good things. And I just look at the good things and say, hey.
So what are the good things? What are the good things right now?
Tomorrow's another day, and I'm very thankful for the time I had in this house.
Hello?
Hi, is this Mike?
It's Mike.
Hi, this
Mike,
week, I checked in again with some of the folks I've met in San Nicolo to see how they're faring over the holidays. Mike Hager and his family just celebrated a quiet Christmas in the house they're renting on the other side of town. He couldn't afford a lot of presents this year for his kids, but he says they understand.
I got to look at Christmas anyway. It's not really about getting gifts all the time. It's about giving. In fact, my daughter, she's given two of her bicycles and a big wheel to some kids that don't have them. Now that we've downsized, a lot of her friends, they don't have nice things that she has.
Mike is still trying to look at the good things as opposed to the bad ones in his situation. And after months of negotiating with his mortgage lenders, in early December, they wrote off his debt and approved a short sale of his house.
So I don't have a foreclosure on my credit, which allows me to buy a house a lot sooner. There's real solutions to this problem out there, and you can either panic with fear and lose your house and lose your mind, or do a little bit of research, contact your lender, and work something out. It's all how you look at it. I know that sounds like I'm an optimistic fool, but there's always a way.
Last we left off in August, everything had converged at one time.
Yeah.
Foreclosure notice on the home. I had gotten laid off.
Veronica, the woman who found out her landlord was in foreclosure, just got a new job for slightly less pay. And she's still in San Nicolo, renting a new house that her landlord helped her find.
So we're really happy. But I'm in that hoarding mode like many other people where I just want to hold on to my money, because I don't know what's going to happen.
The rough economy has forced Veronica's neighbor, Karen Lewis, to move to Houston with her son for the last few months on a temporary job assignment. But she doesn't really miss San Nicolo. In fact, she's hoping to get out of the neighborhood as soon as she can.
Yes. I shouldn't laugh at you.
Why?
I mean, I love my house and I love the community, you know, and the potential, but I just don't think I can wait.
Karen says the gate around her community that was supposed to give a sense of security and prestige, now it just makes her feel trapped.
You know, you think, wow, I've arrived. You know, I have this nice house and a gated community. But it isn't what it seems, or it isn't what I really want in life.
Gates and fancy zip codes don't really matter to Karen anymore, or if her neighbors are real estate moguls or taxi drivers. She just wants them to stay long enough in one place that she and her son can get to know them. I'm Chrissy Clark for Weekend America.
Weekend America is brought to you in part by Target, giving 5% of its income to the community since 1946. That now adds up to over $3 million every week.
Mark gets this FedEx letter asking him to do one simple thing, just one thing, try to save the life of someone he's never met. Next on Weekend America. From American Public Media, it's Weekend America. I'm John Moe. This week, we're taking a look back at some stories from 2008 that have stayed with us throughout the year and stories that we'll probably be thinking about for a while into 2009. This next one really, really stuck with us. One of our producers, Mark Sanchez, received a FedEx package back in early spring, and as soon as he read the return address, he knew that they had found him, they being the National Marrow Donor Program, and Mark was going to have to face something he didn't even know he'd been avoiding.
Dear Mark, thank you for participating in the National Marrow Donor Program, the NMDP. You recently have been identified as a potential match for a 43-year-old man in need of a life-saving bone marrow or blood stem cell transplant. We have been trying to contact you to arrange for confirmatory testing.
About 5 years ago, my cousin Scott was battling Hodgkin's lymphoma. He was getting ready for another round of chemo, and I felt pretty helpless. But what could I do for him? I planned to see him at the hospital, but I put it off for a couple days, and when I finally showed up, a nurse told me that he'd been moved to another hospital. While I was there, she asked me if I wanted to take a test to see if I qualified to be a bone marrow donor for Scott. As a family member, the odds were better that my cells would be a match for him. So she took a blood sample, and I found myself signing up to be part of the National Marrow Donor Program. Basically, if I wasn't a match for Scott, I might be a match for someone else down the road. It didn't seem like much, but I felt like I was helping. I wasn't a match. Scott died not too long after.
We understand that personal situations arise which make continued participation in this program difficult. Therefore, donors may elect to withdraw from this program at any time, either temporarily or permanently.
I tried to forget about the letter, but they wouldn't let me. The NMDP called me at home and at work, but I never answered the phone. It's not that I didn't care about the 43-year-old man, but it was like 5 years ago that I signed up. Being a donor just wasn't on my schedule anymore. I was feeling a little guilty. A friend reminded me that the letter said I was a potential match, and so it wasn't a done deal. In fact, being an exact match was probably a long shot. Perfect. I could go in, get tested, prove to them that my blood wasn't a match, and then my phone would stop ringing and I could walk away guilt-free. So I made the appointment. The nurse drew a little blood, thanked me, and I went on my way. A couple days later, the phone rang. I am a genetic twin of the 43-year-old man.
Hi. Hi. Are you the bone marrow transplant
yes.
clinic? Okay. I'm here for a physical.
What's your name?
Mark Sanchez.
As part of the deal, I had to get a physical. I hadn't been to the doctor in a long time, and I was secretly hoping they might find something wrong with me so I could back out of this. The physical was in the bone marrow transplant clinic. The waiting room was pretty crowded, but it was easy to spot the cancer patients. They were the ones wearing masks. They were there for their chemotherapy. I didn't make eye contact with anyone, and I tried to keep to myself in the waiting room. I kind of felt like an intruder. Then a nurse called my name. I took a deep breath and walked in.
All right. So this is probably the most blood you'll have drawn in one sitting. In your whole life.
She had 11 tubes there, each with a color-coded rubber cap, all waiting for my blood.
It's less than 100 cc's of blood, so you're probably going to have a total of maybe 3 ounces.
A cardiogram, an EKG, and 3 ounces of blood later, and I'm good to go. Cleared for donation. Backache, sore sternum, a touch of insomnia.
One of the major side effects of this is pain.
That's Deb. She's the nurse that came by my house every day to give me shots. The shots stimulate cell growth in my bones, and then the cells are pushed out into my bloodstream, ready for harvesting. I was prescribed a steady diet of Tylenol and ibuprofen to stay ahead of the pain.
I think this is a really wonderful thing you're doing.
People keep telling me this, but it's embarrassing. I don't like being in the spotlight, especially for something I was originally trying to get out of doing.
But you had to sign up for it. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
A lot of people wouldn't do that because of going through all this.
Well, it doesn't seem that bad, you know? I mean, maybe the shot in the stomach will change my mind, but...
Donation day arrives. One last shot to give my white blood cells a jolt.
We're going to do a double arm,
one will be on this side. It will constantly draw your blood.
They stick a needle in my right arm, and blood gets pulled into a centrifuge. That spins out the stem cells. Then the rest of the blood, the stuff that isn't the stem cells, it's pumped back into my left arm.
And, you know, if you need anything, like if you need to eat or you're hungry or you're thirsty, just let me know.
Thank God my wife was there. I'm on this reclining chair with my arms splayed out for like 6.5 hours. 6.5 hours, and I can't move. Anytime I had an itch, she had to scratch it for me. And anytime I wanted something to eat, she had to feed it to me. And anytime I had to go to the bathroom, she was there with the pan.
So you're free.
I'm free.
You got both your arms back.
All right. Before I knew it, we were done.
Make sure you move so slow, very slowly.
Yeah.
Don't move so fast,
I won't
okay?
Get up
because
too
you
quickly.
might be a little bit dizzy. Bye.
Bye.
In the end, the whole process wasn't that big a deal.
Just move slowly, okay?
Okay.
It was only a couple of days out of my life. People probably spend more time doing their taxes every year. The 43-year-old man received his stem cells. And there's this process set up so that donors and recipients can eventually meet each other. But I don't think I'm up for that. After watching Scott go through his battle with cancer, I just can't handle the heartache.
So, Mark, that story originally aired in May. What kind of response did you get after we aired that?
I wasn't expecting anybody to contact me or anything, and people started writing into the website telling me how they were going to sign up for the donor program. And one woman wrote in and said she didn't know how easy it was, and she signed up for the program, and she even got people at work to sign up for the program.
You say in the story that you didn't want to hear from the person who you had donated to. Have you changed your mind on that?
I thought about it, but I still don't think I want to hear from the guy. There's a nurse that's been checking up with me to follow up about how my progress is going, to see if I have any problems. And she will ask me sometimes if I want to know the progress of the recipient of the donation. And, you know, I did it, and I'm glad I did it. And I would probably do it again. But unless it's somebody that I am directly related to, I probably don't want to get involved in that.
Why not?
In this case specifically, I think I was sort of rushed through the donation process because the recipient wasn't doing so well. So I kind of got the feeling that he wasn't going to make it.
You just don't want to know that?
Somewhere deep down, I sort of know that. But I don't want to take that on. I took on the responsibility of going through the donation, but I think that's enough.
Week in America producer Mark Sanchez. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, John.
Weekend America is made possible by grants from CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from public radio stations including WBUR Boston, WCPN Cleveland, KPCC Los Angeles, and KUOW Seattle, and is made possible in part by the University of Washington Foster School of Business Executive MBA Program.
In football, you win by being bigger, stronger, and faster than your opponent. But when you can't do that, you just try to blow your opponent's minds. Ahead on Weekend America. From American Public Media, this is Weekend America. I'm John Moe. We have spent over a year on this show on the trail of Aaron McKittrick and Brentwood Higg Higman. The couple started walking from their home in Seattle to Alaska back in June of 2007, and we've been periodically checking in on their progress. Now, Higg grew up in Seldovia, Alaska, and when last we heard, that's where the couple had ended their journey. They were even thinking of calling this small Alaskan town home, like long-term. With their journey and with 2008 at an end, let's visit with them one more time, see how that walk's going, see how their feet are feeling. Higg and Aaron, thanks for checking in with us again.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
How are you two different now than you were before you took that first step?
It's a huge piece of experience. You know, it was over a year, 380 some days, I think. And I mean, I don't think I could quite sit down and specify something that happened on every one of those 380 some days, but probably on 4/5 of them anyway, I could. And in a way, you know, maybe who you are is a big piece of that, not the only thing, but a big piece of that is this accumulation of experiences. And that was more experiences than I've ever had in any other 1 year, certainly.
More than I think you'd have in 10 years and doing much of anything else. I mean, clearly, some things must have changed in us to change our, you know, life path, and, you know, it is so much experience.
Well, you're now pregnant.
Well, that's true, too. But
oh.
Yes, wow. I'm much larger.
When are you due, Aaron?
February.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Wow. And when we last heard from you, you were talking about staying in Alaska. What's the status of that life decision right now?
Well, it's moving forward pretty well here. We actually bought ourselves a yurt.
A yurt?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like in a round lattice with a fabric covering.
You've talked to us before about the idea of home changing from day to day. What is home for you these days?
Well, I guess home, we finally have a, you know, because we have our yurt, we have a more traditional, sort of, anyway, structure that we can call home. We can heat it and has power and everything like that. But, I don't know, kind of this whole area is home. I get, you know, you can look out the window each day and see, oh, yeah, what are the mountains doing today? What's the snow doing?
Either that or maybe home is where the internet connection is. That might be it, too.
How big is the yurt?
24 feet in diameter.
Which works out to about 450 square feet.
Like a small studio apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, except round, you know. And
right. Without walls.
Right.
All outside walls, but no inside walls separating things.
So really nothing like a studio apartment.
No. And a big and a wood stove, not a big one, a little wood stove right in the very middle, which is also kind of not like a studio apartment.
Well, you know, you guys, once you've bought a yurt, you know, the roots are down.
Yes, although at least we don't have to deal with this whole mortgage thing, because we don't have a mortgage on our yurt. We just own one.
You own the yurt outright.
Yes.
So there is no yurt bubble to worry about.
No.
Not yet, anyway. And we're going to get in on the good side of the yurt bubble if it happens. So.
Right. Old-time yurt owners. Well, before long, we might all be coming to you for yurt designs. Do you think if you had just flown up to Seldovia instead of walked, it would feel like a place that you wanted to settle down in for a while?
Probably not. We visited here before, for instance, a number of times before we came.
Well, wouldn't you say that you had no intention of moving to a small Alaskan village?
Before we started walking through them? Yeah,
yeah.
I had no intention of coming up here.
So what happened?
I guess we just, by being generously hosted by people in so many of these small little towns and kind of seeing what life was like there, it started to seem more and more appealing, and I think, you know, we were a little separated from all the amenities of the city and then realized that they weren't maybe as important as I would have thought.
From Seldovia, Alaska, where they may be for a while, Higg Higman and Aaron McKittrick. Thanks, you guys, and good luck up there.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
From American Public Media, this is Weekend America. I'm John Moe. The Piedmont, California Highlanders finished their 2008 football season with 8 wins and 3 losses. They got to the playoffs. They lost in the first round. A pretty respectable record for a very competitive high school football league. But that's not why Weekend America and dozens of other media organizations were covering the Piedmont Highlanders this year. It was their offensive strategy. A strategy that is, well, it's crazy. So crazy, as the saying goes, that it just might work. We sent reporter Roman Mars to find out what may be the future of football.
Tonight is like everything is on the line. Piedmont tradition is built upon upsets. We got 31 Rudys on the team. We got 31 Rudys on the team. Nobody's giving us a chance tonight. Nobody's given us a chance.
Whoa! You've seen this movie. It's 4th and 10 and the bottom of the 9th, and Rocky has already been knocked down twice this round. Or something like that. But in the traditional narrative, the undersized underdog always has one ace up his sleeve. A trick play so cunning that it throws everyone for a loop. Now imagine that our underdog has 16,000 aces up his sleeve, and you'll begin to understand the appeal of the A11 high school football offense.
We are going to have a different shape formation. We're going to make the defense think about what's happening. It doesn't matter to us whether they think that a trick play is coming, because yes, it is. On every play, something different is going to be coming at you. We want to make one of those great plays that wins the football game on every play.
That's Piedmont High School offensive coordinator Steve Humphreys. He and head coach Kurt Bryan developed the A11 offense as a way for their small school with generally smaller players to compete against some of the powerhouse teams in their division. From high above in the bleachers, the basic A11 formation looks something like this. 3 receivers are out wide to the right, 3 receivers are wide to the left. Then there's a center with 2 players on either side and 2 quarterbacks in the shotgun formation, 7 yards behind the center who snaps the ball. So there are players spread out the entire width of the field, and it eliminates that tight offensive line formation that we're used to seeing in football. All 11 players are potential receivers, hence the name A11. The defense doesn't know who is actually a downfield threat until the very last moment when the ball is snapped. And because there can be 2 quarterbacks, the defense doesn't even know who's getting the ball to begin with. It's fun and confusing to watch. And that's the point. When a Yale professor calculated the increase in the number of A11 offensive permutations as compared to the standard football formation, he got a result that even surprised Bryan and Humphreys.
It was from 36 to over 16,600 different combinations. And what's pretty neat about that is that it just lends itself to so much different strategy.
It creates 9, 10, or 11 one-on-one battles, little islands. So it's fun for the players because they never know who's going to touch the football, and it's very exciting for the fans to watch. Yeah!
The Highlanders starting off with great field position in their patented A11 offense. Jeremy George is in the back.
Jeremy George, quarterback, and I'm a senior. Last year we had Ryan Lipkin. Both of us played quarterback, and he would get the snaps sometimes, and so I would be blocking or I'd be faking to the right or something, and I'd let him throw the ball, and we worked really well together.
Did you think that when you were a quarterback at this team that you'd be blocking as the quarterback?
To be honest, no, I did not think I'd be blocking too much.
Let's go, D! Let's go, D!
Tonight's opponent is Encinal, a team that's 4-0 and probably has a 30-pound advantage on the average Piedmont Highlander.
They're really deadly. They're like a rattlesnake. They can just strike you. So we brought in a little rattlesnake rattle, right? We tried to get the kids even extra fired up.
2 things you gotta do tonight. You gotta cut their head off. And then what do you gotta do?
Oh boy, I didn't hear that.
You gotta cut their head off. Then what do you gotta do?
They can't even hear you outside this locker room.
You gotta cut their head off. Then what do you gotta do?
Take the rattle.
Am I clear?
Yes, go.
I can't hear you.
Am I clear?
Yes, go.
And this is the point where I have to tell you that they lost. I know. I wanted them to win so badly. But it didn't happen, because in the end, no matter what you try, the better team usually wins.
it goes to show that no matter how hyped up this offense is, you know, it's not perfect, and we're not perfect, and Ensenal is just a better team.
If we had lined up in a conventional offense all night against a team like Ensenal, they would just man up on us, and it would be brutal.
And that's the general consensus on this new experimental offense. The team doesn't win every time, but when they do lose, at least they're always in the game. And other small schools around the country, they've noticed.
Saddleback Valley Christian in Southern California is undefeated. They run a beautiful version of the A11. Madison County High in Alabama is 6-0. Right across the bay here, Mission High in San Francisco is doing well with it. There were so many coaches in the same boat as we were in, and so many teams where their players were in the same boat that our players are in, and this simply gives them a little bit better of a fighting chance.
After their loss against Ensenal, the Piedmont Highlanders went on to win the following three games and appear to be a lock for the playoffs again this year. After their season wraps up, the creators of the A11 offense, Kurt Bryan and Steve Humphreys, will be on the road teaching the method of their madness at coaching clinics across the country. In Piedmont, California, I'm Roman Mars for Weekend America.
Roman tells us that no offensive players at Piedmont have sustained anything but minor injuries since the team started running the A11 offense. See, kids, you don't have to be strong and fast. You just have to be clever. Find photos of Piedmont High running the A11 formation at weekendamerica.org. In April, we brought you the story of two sisters, Charnita Munday and Helen Hatcher. They'd been inseparable their whole lives. But in the late 1970s, they were kicked out of their homes in Hamtramck, Michigan. It was part of a systemic effort by the city to get rid of African-American neighborhoods. Charnita and Helen found themselves living apart for the first time. Poor health put them both in wheelchairs, making it more difficult to see each other. The black residents of Hamtramck eventually won a discrimination suit. It took decades, but the city finally built new homes for the victims to buy or rent at low prices. This spring, Charnita and Helen moved back to side-by-side houses. The homes even had ramps so that the two sisters could visit each other. Weekend America's Desiree Cooper checked in on them this holiday season to see how they were doing.
The day is cold and sleety, but Charnita's house is all bright and cheerful. She's hung a handmade wreath on the door, and there's these skinny plastic candy canes that are lining the sidewalk between her house and her sister Helen's house next door. The weather's so bad outside that the wheelchair ramps are kind of slippery, and so that makes it hard for the women to visit each other. So I end up shuttling back and forth between the two houses. Helen and Charnita are a year apart. They're both in their early 60s, and they still do everything alike. They even sound like twins. Charnita is the one with a little bit of fire. Helen is easygoing, almost pious. As she sits by her Christmas tree, Helen remembers what Christmas used to mean to them over the years.
Christmas Eve was our time. You know, when we was in good health, and we would always celebrate Christmas Eve at my house. And Christmas Day, we would go to Charnita House for dinner. But since we had moved far apart, we never did it no more.
Well, this year will be different. The sisters have planned their menus. They're going to have ham, stuffing, homemade desserts, even freshly baked bread. Helen said that nothing is going to stop them from being together this year.
And I told her, if snow on the ground, she can move over. Somebody going to bring her over here. If she can't get back out, I got a big old bed. Me and her be right there in that bed the Christmas morning. Somebody gonna roll us back over to her house for dinner. I can say we have a lot of presents or not, but we have each other.
The pain of the discrimination that forced them out of Hamtramck almost 30 years ago seems to be forgotten. But Charnita, who's the more skeptical of the two, has wondered if this is all too good to be true. And this summer, something happened to confirm her suspicions.
Yes, I got a notice of eviction.
Just like the other blacks who've moved back to Hamtramck, Charnita's payments are subsidized by the racial discrimination settlement. Her payments are modest, but she says she always pays on time. And still, the eviction notice came.
I kept thinking about that I was this close to my sister. And we was going to be pulled apart again.
I asked Helen what she would do if her sister got evicted.
If my sister had to leave, I was leaving too, whether I got an eviction notice or not. Because we had went through this once before, you know, being put out.
As the fiery one, Charnita got on the phone and she asked a lot of questions. There had been a computer glitch. She didn't have to move after all.
The eviction notice was a mistake. But still, sometimes when people make mistakes, they be unaware how it has an effect upon a person.
The prospect of losing her home, the bad economy, the rash of foreclosures in Michigan, all that has just made Charnita grateful for what she has.
So I'm ready for the holidays. Can't wait. You know, just like a little child on Christmas, waiting for Christmas Eve because you know Santa Claus coming. And I know there's not a Santa, but you know, I look at the Christmas pictures and I just get happy, I believe.
You said you believe. What do you believe?
I believe sometimes dreams do come true. Things do happen. If you wait long enough and you pray hard, it happens.
Now it's as if Helen and Charnita were never apart. They laugh at how they'll get up and they'll dress in the same colors or they'll call each other at exactly the same moment. As I walked from house to house, I found out that they even have the same New Year's resolutions.
This is Helen speaking. Well, I got one plan, one New Year's resolution. I wish I could do more for myself, and I wish I could lose some weight. This is Charnita speaking. My New Year's resolution is to lose some of this weight so that I can get around better and get out more.
Maybe a year from now, they'll be out of their wheelchairs and walking to each other's homes for the holidays. In Hamtramck, Michigan, I'm Desiree Cooper for Weekend America.
Updates on financially struggling supervillains, deceptively relevant football players, and hamsters who make long journeys in minivans, ahead on Weekend America.
Weekend America, supported by Gather.com. If it's happening in the world, it's being discussed on Gather. People are talking about their weekends at Gather.com. And by Clarkson Potter, publishers of The Splendid Tables, How to Eat Supper, a holiday gift idea for people who love to eat. Now available at SplendidTable.org.
From American Public Media, it's Weekend America. I'm John Moe. An update now on more stories from the last year. In October, the economic collapse was in full force. It seemed like the perfect time for a supervillain to take over the planet. But when we reached supervillain Dr. Cruelty, world conquest was not on track.
If the credit markets are frozen, I can't pay scientists to build my death ray. And I can't get the factories going to build my robot army. How do I get billions of people to cower before me without a death ray or a robot army? No cower, no power, John, I always say. I had this scheme, okay? I was going to steal from Lehman Brothers, Wachovia, and Washington Mutual. It was the perfect plan. These are financial institutions. They're banks.
So that was October, and Dr. Cruelty joins us again. Hello, Doctor.
Hi, John.
Where are you right now?
I'm on a payphone at the Stop and Go store. My skull-shaped mountain lair was foreclosed on, and now I'm living in what is technically a storage locker. So, yeah, that happened.
Wow. Well, I'm sorry you've had that setback.
A temporary setback, John. Temporary. I have a plan to get right back on track.
What do you mean?
Seven magical letters, John. B-A-I-L-O-U-T.
Oh, now come on, Dr. Cruelty. You can't ask for a federal bailout.
Hey, look at the facts, John. I've run my business poorly. I'm arrogant. As CEO, I've rewarded myself with obscene riches. I fit the profile. Bail me out, John. Get America back on track.
How much are you asking for?
$100 zillion.
But you're evil, and zillion isn't even a real number.
I really don't anticipate that being a problem.
Well, good luck to you.
Okay, I'd settle for 10 zillion. 5 million? 20 bucks.
Thank you, Dr. Cruelty.
A ham sandwich. Come on.
Dr. Cruelty's plans are a long shot. Ramsey Robinson was a long shot, too. He was the final pick in the 2007 NFL draft, earning him the title Mr. Irrelevant. Every year, the last pick becomes a tongue-in-cheek celebrity, gets flown to California for a big, silly Mr. Irrelevant banquet by some millionaires with too much time on their hands. I talked to Ramsey, who plays for the Detroit Lions, in April, the weekend of the NFL draft, as a new Mr. Irrelevant was about to be picked. I asked if he had any advice for his 2008 successor.
Believe in yourself, have faith in your abilities, because nobody really is going to give you any credit for how good you might be or could be.
The next day, David Vibora was chosen by the St. Louis Rams with the final pick of the 2008 draft, the new Mr. Irrelevant. I reached David after practice the other day. He's had a good year.
In preseason, I got a bad ankle sprain and had to battle back from that to make the team. Week one, I wind up getting released, signed back to the practice squad, and after spending, I believe, almost seven, eight weeks on the practice squad, they reactivated me. And then I actually got to start a game here a couple weeks ago against Miami, had 10 tackles.
David was the first Mr. Irrelevant to start a game in his rookie season since 1994. The Rams finish their season tomorrow, and they've had a terrible year. But when you've already been told you're irrelevant, your spirit is hard to break.
Every morning when I wake up, I ask myself two things. The first is, do I love football? And the answer is always yes. The second thing is, you know, would I be acting any differently or working any harder if we were, say, 11-2 rather than 2-11? And if that answer is yes, I would be working harder or something, then, you know, you're doing the wrong thing.
So is his title now in jeopardy?
I know, I might have to drop the I and the R and just be relevant now.
Last spring, I chronicled my cross-country move from Seattle to St. Paul. My family was going to be traveling out by train, but a few weeks before that trip, I took another trip.
Good morning, Fuzzy. Are you ready to go on a trip?
I drove out to drop off the family minivan and my son's hamster, Fuzzy. Fuzzy wasn't allowed on the train and couldn't be mailed, so we drove, just me and the hamster.
We got snacks. You want a snack? You want a carrot? Hey, that's my microphone, dude.
It was a long trip, and a cold one. Minus 20 at times. Hamster-killing weather. And Fuzzy became symbolic. I had to protect this fragile little creature the way I look after my family. And this van ride was a test for our actual move to the Midwest.
If I can just keep this hamster alive from Seattle to St. Paul, then maybe I kind of know what I'm doing. Maybe I can handle things a little. It's kind of crazy that it's come to that, but that's what it's come to.
By the end of the trip, everything was okay.
That was a long day. It's about 12:30. We're in the hotel. You're in your exercise ball, and you're doing fine. Your continued living makes me feel like a more capable human being, Fuzzy.
Since then, my family has settled into St. Paul, bought a house, unpacked. A few weeks ago, just before my son Charlie's birthday, we noticed that Fuzzy was moving pretty slowly, eyes closed. Charlie asked if Fuzzy was going to be okay.
I said I didn't think so. He cried. We all cried. We went to bed that night, sure that Fuzzy would be gone by morning. My son gave me explicit instructions. In the event of Fuzzy's death, bury her and then break the news. The next morning, I went to check on Fuzzy, and she seemed to be better. Eyes open, not spry, but active. Charlie's birthday came and went. A few days later, Fuzzy died. I buried her inside her little wooden house out in the garden. My wife said, now that we have a pet buried out there, it really feels like home. When I told Charlie, he was sad, but he didn't cry. He'd already done that, he said. Then he asked if we could go get a new hamster. A good parent probably would have said, no, let's wait, let's grieve. But Charlie has experienced loss before. He's known people who have died. So I said, yeah, let's go. I wanted to celebrate life. We went down to the Petco in St. Paul and found a male long hair, a really young one. He was adorable. He looks a little like Fuzzy, Charlie said, and he decided the hamster would be named Little. Then we brought Little home. And that's it for another hour of American Public Media's Weekend America. I'm John Moe. You can download a free podcast of our entire program at weekendamerica.org. O-R-G spells org. You can also pronounce it weekendamerica.org. We're not real particular about that. It's also available on iTunes. You can listen to our podcast all week long. You don't need to listen to it on the weekend. It's like having a weekend on a Tuesday, the podcast. It's delightful. Get out there and enjoy your weekend, will ya? Bye now.
Weekend America is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. This program is made possible with support from AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio, and public radio stations including WMFE Orlando, KUOW Seattle, and KNOW St. Paul, and made possible by grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Weekend America is produced and distributed by
American Public Media.
Hi, this is John Moe, host of Weekend America. The weekend has its own schedule, and it definitely has its own soundtrack that moves you along.
When I'm out training on the weekends for triathlons and marathons, and all I have to rely on is that mental drive at some point because my body's going to start to get a little tired, I just play this song.
Join us and hear exactly what the weekend sounds like on Weekend America.